Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, today on the show, we're going to talk a little about nutrients in crops, especially potassium. Potassium is so unbelievably important, and you hear us discuss it from time to time here on the show, but we wanted to get a little more in detail on today's show. As always, though, we are happy to take your phone call and talk about anything going on your farm or answer any of your questions. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD if you'd like to call in. Again, that's 844-442-4743. You can also email us, radio@agphd.com. We're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a minute here. Or you can find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, let me start you with this, with potassium, and then we'll get on to the Ag PhD mailbag. With potassium, there are two key things that you want to look at. Number one is how many pounds are in the soil. Now, on the soil test, that's usually going to tell you parts per million. The other thing that we would encourage you to take a look at is base saturation potassium. So pounds, obviously, that's pretty self-explanatory. You know you have to have a certain number of pounds to raise whatever crop you're looking at. But the reason why the base saturation thing is so important is because if your potassium is out of whack compared to the other nutrients that we're looking at in there, calcium, magnesium, hydrogen, and sodium, if potassium is too low, that can cause problems, or if it's too high, that can cause problems. So we want to make sure it's in ratio. And, you know, often we get questions. In fact, I think we just had one yesterday about, well, what are the right ratios on certain nutrients? That's a hard question, and there's not an exact perfect answer, at least that I have found yet. But to make it simple, because I think as farmers and as agronomists, we got to keep stuff simple. We have so many things we're trying to manage. We have to keep it simple. And so by looking at base saturation potassium, there's a simple number that you can look at. And what we would tell you all the time is you want that number in the 4% to 8% range. If you're in the 4% to 8% range, the odds are pretty high that potassium isn't going to be your limiting factor. Now, it still could be. So you still need to do some plant tissue analysis. You still need to be looking at things overall. But I would just say when you're in the 4 to 8% range, we usually feel pretty good. You want to be toward the higher end of the spectrum. If you've got lighter soil, or if you have a really high yield goal, you can be on the lower end of the spectrum if you have a lower yield goal or if you have really heavy soil, okay? But 4% to 8% is kind of where you want to be. So anyway, we'll talk about potassium all throughout the show today, but right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, Brian, got one from PA. He says, how much liquid elemental sulfur should I apply to reduce alkalinity in my soil?
Okay, so first of all, I don't know where you're going to get liquid elemental sulfur. If you can find that, great, but I don't know what the cost is going to be. That's one of the things. The second thing is
It on a per hectare basis, Brian.
Oh,
so
boy.
Somewhere else.
Okay, well, there's no person in the world that can tell you exactly what you need to get your pH right. Not a soul, and I realize that there have been universities, there have been all kinds of people who have done testing. We have, too. Nobody's found the magic number, in part because cation exchange capacity varies. And the higher your cation exchange capacity, in other words, the heavier your soil, the more elemental sulfur it's going to take. And then the next thing is, how quickly is that elemental sulfur going to convert over to sulfate? In that conversion, bacteria actually are the ones that change it, help change the form. And when that form is changing, sulfuric acid, almost said hydrochloric, it's not hydrochloric, sulfuric acid is created, and that acid will lower the pH. But that's also not going to happen if you don't have good drainage. Okay, so let me step back and go through this one more time. You have to have great drainage first. If you don't have great drainage, just forget about elemental sulfur. You're completely wasting your money. Number two, what you're looking for is the heavier your soil, the higher rate you're going to have to go. Like for us, on a per acre basis, we're typically talking about 100 to 200 pounds at a bare minimum on medium textured soils to take a pH from, let's say, 7.5 to 6.5. Okay. So it depends on how extreme your pH is, and what do you want to get it down to, and how heavy the soil is. Then on top of that, usually we're talking about dry elemental sulfur. And it depends on how fine that particle size is. So in other words, we want, just like lime, same kind of thing. The smaller the particle, the quicker it's going to dissolve, the quicker it's going to convert. But again, it's bacteria that makes the conversion. So if you have more of the bacteria, then you'll have faster conversion. And if you have more heat, remember, bacteria are going to thrive when it's warm. They are not going to do well when it's super cold. So you can see how there are so many factors that go into this, and this is why nobody can tell you exactly what to do. So what we encourage you to do is start experimenting yourself and work on figuring it out yourself. But I hopefully give you a few guidelines, things that you can think about there, but make sure the drainage is taken care of first. Otherwise, save your money. Elemental sulfur is a complete waste, in my experience.
All right, I got a potassium question as from Chet in Montana. He said, in eastern Montana, a lot of agronomists here say we don't need any more potassium. We've got irrigated land in the Yellowstone Valley between 175 and 250 parts per million of K. Base saturation, though, is only 1.7 to 2.3%.
Yeah, so you absolutely need potassium, and whoever's been telling you you don't need it, they're wrong. They're just flat out wrong. Put potassium out there and you will see better yield, better stand, thicker stalk, better grain quality, faster dry down. I mean, all the things that you know are important. So it you got to get more potassium out there. Here's the other thing. So every once in a while, somebody will say, well, Brian, my goodness, you want me to spend money to put whatever, 400 pounds or 500 pounds of potash out there. And I'm like, well, it's literally like 2 years worth of potash. I'm not asking you for much. But let's say that I'm dead wrong. Let's say that it doesn't pay. What's the worst possible thing that's going to happen in most soils? I'm not saying in all, but in most soils, they're heavy enough to hold the potassium, and you're just going to, that potassium's going to sit there till next year. So very worst case scenario, you spend double the money this year, you spend no money next year. You came out exactly the same. So but I'm telling you, you've got to get that base saturation K number up. Otherwise, you're not going to get enough potassium into the plant. Even though a lot of people say, oh, my parts per million is good. Believe me, it's not if your base saturation K isn't there. We'll talk more about potassium next.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice with powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop, grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Have resistant weeds invaded your cornfields? Tough 5EC, manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, can help. When added to the post-emergence tank mix, Tough 5EC synergizes the effectiveness of HPPD inhibitors on key broadleaf weeds. In fact, university field trials have shown 5 to 30% increased control of herbicide-resistant Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Now that's tough on weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Pentair Hypro Ultra Low Drift Nozzles are your ideal choice for the Enlist E3 herbicide system. With coverage comparable to flat fans and with 90% less drift, ULD nozzles meet all required standards for Enlist applications and provide optimal performance of contact herbicides. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the Endzone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Today we're going to talk about potassium. So as you can tell, Brian's already excited about this. It's a nutrient that's made a lot of difference on our farm. It's really helped us. We really struggled with this for a long time on our farm, and man, has it made a difference since we've solved this challenge? Now, it may or may not be the number one challenge on your farm, but wanted to talk about potassium a little bit on today's program, tell you what to look for in your soils and on your soil tests and in your plants. And if it is something that needs to be addressed, we'll give you some guidance on that too. Got our friend Bill Brush out in California with us right now to talk a little potassium. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good to talk to you guys today.
Well, you can tell the last couple of minutes here, Brian has started talking about potassium. You can see the fire that he's got about potassium and the passion there because it's made such a difference on our farm. Have you seen that with other growers you work with?
Oh, yeah, it's all the time. We always talk about N, P, and K. And sometimes because K is third in the order, we sometimes tend to think when we look at how many parts per million we have in the soil that we have enough. And remember, you know, one of the things, and I was listening to his explanation earlier, and one of the things I found is that just keep going back to really one of the most important pieces, and that's what we call the CEC or TEC, but the exchange capacity. That's where the activity gets done. Most soils have thousands of pounds of potash. But like everything, if it's not available, it doesn't make any difference how much you have. That base saturation tells you what you will be able to deliver to your crop over the next 12 months. And it's exchanging it off of that soil colloid. And as it is, if you've got good bacterial growth, you will get good mineralization and get some of those things to release. But if you don't get CalMag in balance, you don't get microbial activity, you don't get that release, and everything slows down from that point.
Now, when we look at this, I know in our farm we were seeing issues. Well, Brian outlined a lot of them, but we definitely saw some stalk issues out there. And as we added more potassium, we got a lot more girth. I find talking to growers, not just in our country, but really around the world, that a lot of the recommendations they're hearing are for crop removal rather than total needs of the crop. Can you talk to us about how big a difference that is?
Well, it's huge because you don't want to have a bank that you just took away from and didn't put not only what the crop needs are, but also what's in your stock or your residual material that will be worked back into material and available down the road. You know, the number one nutrient for stock strength is potassium, and there's other ones, manganese because of its formation of lignin, and also copper to give your stock some resiliency or a bendability without breaking. Those are your stock strength, but without potassium, the other ones are insignificant. You have to have it. It's also the number one thing that we look at when we want a mature crop. So we want our tissues to be rising with potassium at the end rather than falling. Nitrogen should be falling. We've done our growth. Now we're trying to mature that crop or grain. Whether out here it's in all of our nut crops, etc., it's the same when you go to corn. To finish that grain, you need potassium. And if you think about it, you need to make sure that potassium's in that grain because it weighs more than water, and water dries down, and we need to get potassium heavily into that grain. And that's what we're looking at as removal. But the devil's always, as we say in the details, if you have a high calcium-magnesium combined, okay, and what I mean by that is like 90%, and that could be from a 70% calcium and a 20% magnesium, clear down to a 60% calcium and a 30% magnesium. Those are all different types of soil. But when you have 90%, there is not much room to squeeze potassium onto that soil, that exchangeable site that we need to get it to. So there's only one other way to do that, and that's to frequently apply nutrients, particularly potassium, because it's going to not necessarily move those off because they're much stronger cations. And because they won't move those off the soil colloid, you just have to have it free in that soil solution. And it doesn't last. It eventually gets tied up. It's not on the exchange site, and it's not available. So how you apply your potassium becomes really important. And that's why on these acidic soils, if you apply potassium, it has the ability to move off hydrogen and replace that on the soil colloid at an exchangeable position, and it becomes much more easy a job to get that to work.
You know, a couple of things there as we look at that. The lower pH side, we generally have more hydrogen on there, but you were talking about high calcium, high magnesium. How about in really light sandy soils? Here's another spot where we talk to growers all the time and say, boy, you guys are nuts on your 4-8% base saturation K recommendation. You're never going to have enough. We've got to start with way more than that at the beginning of the year just to be able to get anywhere. Do you do that on lighter soils? Do you kind of load up on K early, or are you just forced to be feeding it constantly through the year?
Yeah, you really have to feed it constantly. A lot of people say, well, I've tried potassium and I don't see any increase on the exchange site. Well, you have to look at, you know, we work out here in California, anywhere from soils that'll be heavy clays, they'll be 40 to 45 CEC or TEC, clear down to twos and threes. Everything in between. We have everything in California that these different soil types. You cannot treat them anywhere close to the same. You know, I can have a 7.5 and beautiful base saturation on a 4 or 5 exchange capacity. There is not enough pounds stored there for me to feed my crop. Particularly, you take a high potassium user, whether it be corn, our silage corns or our grain corns or our nut crops. They need somewhere in the neighborhood of 550 pounds available, or you won't get enough into that plant. And the only way you can do that is feed it, because the soil at best, and if you just do the math on the exchange capacity and what your base saturation is, you just can't get enough. It's not unusual for me to see good, what I call base saturations of 5 to 7, and yet less than 30% of the potassium they're going to need to grow the crop. So, and no matter how much you try to load it up, you're not going to displace the calcium or magnesium with it. And at the same time, you're not going to have enough to feed the crop. So you're going to need to feed that multiple times throughout the year.
Yeah, it is a challenge. And I know sometimes growers say, oh, I wish I had heavy soils like Iowa or Illinois. And other times I hear guys say, boy, the lighter soils sound like it'd be the way to go, because we see world records being grown on them. This potassium thing is easy. Now, or is not easy, no matter what soil you're in. One comment that Brian had to me yesterday, we were talking a little bit about nutrient stratification, and I just made the comment to him that I see our corn stalks, I see our corn pulling a lot of K up to grow these 10-foot-tall plants above ground, and then we harvest the grain, the residues left in the field. When we get some rain, it flushes a lot of that K out. And I see a lot of concentration of K on the soil surface. Is that a challenge in different crops and in different environments?
Well, what you have to remember is that, you know, and sometimes we give not nearly enough information or enough credit to the incredible biology that we have in soils. And to get our biological activity up, it always comes back to getting enough air in the soil, because they're aerobic bacteria. They thrive in the presence of air. And if you don't have that, your residue can sit there for multiple years and look like nothing's really happening to it, because ultimately that microbiology is what breaks down that cellulose and that tissue and returns it back and mineralizes it back in the soil. A lot of what Dr. Albrecht, William Albrecht from University of Missouri, has always said, he says, you know, you feed the soil and the soil feeds the crop, okay? Or you build a house for the biology to thrive in. That's what we're trying to do, because they're way better at delivering nutrients than our crops than we ever thought we could be. And yet all we're trying to do is get our soils in the proper condition and the proper shape to be able to deliver all those nutrients and when they're needed to that crop.
Oh, that is a great way to look at it, Bill. I really appreciate it. Hey, thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck to everybody out in California with all the wildfires and everything going on there too. Thanks, Bill. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
When it comes to leading herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. New Farm brings you Cheetah, a high-quality glufosinate herbicide made right here in the USA. Now for use on a wide variety of crops with glufosinate-resistant traits, including Enlist crops. Its novel mode of action will manage existing or emerging herbicide resistance and provide fast, effective results. This means you can focus more on profitability and less on weeds. New Farm and Cheetah Herbicide, here to help.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expected soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability and boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about potassium. And yes, if you're out there harvesting your crops like we are on our farm right now today, getting a little harvest done, you're probably thinking about, now I'm going to have to spend some money on fertilizer again to replace some of these nutrients that we took off. And this is certainly one of the big ones that you're going to look at. And there's a lot of fall application of potassium as you travel around into different areas and different soils in our country. Happy to have Peter Scharf with us right now at the University of Missouri. Peter, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
All right, so it's harvest time, and a lot of growers, as they're harvesting, are thinking about replacing nutrients out there. For us, the natural thing to do is do some soil testing. I know there's a lot of debate about this. What's the best way to soil test for some of these different nutrients? What do you find with soil testing for potassium? What are some of the recommendations coming out of the University of Missouri?
Well, you know, I haven't done that much work on it. I've done a lot of reading on it, and what I can say, some beautiful work in Illinois was done by Steve Ebelhar and Ed Varsa, and they sampled monthly for about 2.5 years. And what they found was that soil potassium test, the standard test that nearly every lab does, goes up and down a lot during the course of a year, from a high, you know, the high is about twice as high as the low. So one recommendation is try to sample at the same time every year, and it's best if, you know, if it's not, it has something to do with soil moisture status, too. I'm pretty sure of that. So there's just some natural variability in it, and don't get too worried about that. Use it as a long-term ongoing guideline without getting hung up on, that it might be a little higher or a little lower than you expected.
Yeah, it's easy to panic on some of those things, kind of like a test result that you got back in high school or something, where you get a little nervous about one of those.
Oh, you're taking me back.
Well, me too. It's been a long time. Okay, so talk to us about plants then, because oftentimes, like for our farm, I'll give you a great example. When I first figured out that potassium was going to be a big deal for us, we had a corn test plot. And I was pretty young, but I remember walking through the plot, and I knew what nitrogen deficiency looked like on corn leaves down at the bottom of the plant, firing from the tip, going up the midrib. And I saw some firing on the outside edges of the leaves. And I hadn't seen that before. And I thought, man, that looks like something that I've seen before. And I looked up in one of my books and I found, oh no, I've got potassium deficiency. And I remember coming in, talking to my dad and my brother about that. And I was like, you know, guys, we got potassium deficiency in a few of the hybrids out on this plot. And my dad said, there's no way. We can't have potassium deficiency. Sure enough, we did. And it was the visual symptom that showed us, wow, we really need to get excited about this and address this problem. Do you see other signs out in fields in various crops that you work with that would tip growers off to, hey, if you're seeing this, you might want to investigate potassium a little bit?
Right. Well, you know, I've never seen it in wheat. I've rarely seen it in alfalfa. It's not uncommon in corn and beans, and it's especially common when you hit a dry patch, especially a dry spring. You're going to see it. And in both corn and beans, it's the edges of the leaves, and it's usually the older leaves. It's always the older leaves of corn. The bottom of the plant's where you're going to see it. With soybeans, the oldest leaves coming from the lowest branches aren't necessarily particularly low in the canopy. The petioles can be real long, and they can be sticking up there, and they look yellow, and you think, hey, those are on top. But when you trace them back, they're usually on the bottom. I have seen plants, and I think this has got to be genetics, where the bottom leaves aren't showing it and the top leaves aren't showing it. It's some leaves in the middle that are showing it. Because what the plant is doing is it's sacrificing those leaves, pulling the potassium out and putting it into the new growth. And usually with most plants, that's going to happen from the bottom leaves. But on beans, it doesn't always have to be that way. But when you see that burning around the edges, that yellowing turning to brown, that's probably going to be potassium, especially on the older leaves. And, you know, I have seen crops grow out of it, for sure, but you should not ignore it. You should pay attention to it. You should consider, increasing your soil testing in the fields where you're seeing it to make sure that that's looking okay, or do a response test. I mean, we've got the technology now that it's not that hard to check on farm. How many bushels is this costing me? But if it's because of drought and then it wets up, you know, you get a rain, it may grow out of it. But if it doesn't, that's trouble.
Yeah, that's good advice too. When you think about the extreme weather that we've had over the last few years, some areas, well, like our farm is a good example. We were way too wet for 2 years. This year, way too dry, and we're seeing some different things out there, especially when you look at plants just struggling with dry soil to pull in the nutrients they need. We're talking with Peter Scharf at the University of Missouri here about potassium. Peter, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck to you here this fall.
Thank you. It was great to be on.
You bet. Let's head over to Illinois. We've got Matt Swanson on with us right now, and Matt's got quite a following online. One of the guys has been battling out for high yielding corn. Matt, is potassium one of those nutrients that's helping you get those high yields?
Potassium is probably the single largest issue we face year to year, Darren.
Okay, now I talk to growers all over that say, "Oh, if I just farmed in Illinois," and what you're saying is it's not perfect over there.
Yeah, no, far from it, at least when it comes to potassium anyway.
Okay, so what do you use as your guideline? I know you do a lot of soil testing and tissue testing and all that, and also just keeping a really good eye on your fields. What do you see that's tipping you off? Is it signs on the plant? Is it signs on the soil test? What triggers a potassium application for you?
Well, I mean, historically, or how we know that it's a major issue is every year we get late in the year, and even in fields with, you know, where you have 300 to 400 parts per million of potassium, we'll still run a potassium deficiency in August, almost without fail. And of course, if you have less than that, then it's even more pronounced. So that's kind of our initial indicator, at least know what your history is. But now we're working with the tissue test, where we have been for the last several years anyway, And then here this year, we tried a new, new to us anyway, a new soil test where we're kind of evaluating what's available in the soil at the time every couple weeks and trying to, go out ahead of our major draw periods and apply then.
Interesting. Yeah, I think as science allows us to measure some of these things, it makes management of them much easier. Do you find the same things true in soybeans as you do in corn? And then also, I know you've talked about triticale before and cover crops and different things. Do you find crop rotation is making a big issue for you too, or giving you an opportunity?
Well, I mean, obviously, any time that we can get across the field, it gives us an opportunity. The biggest issue we face here is it's not necessarily how much you have in the soil, but what's actually available. I mean, we have so much magnesium here that our potassium, even when we have high test levels, it's still a detriment to us, the magnesium is. So we've, in the last year or so, we've moved away from applying, potash specifically in the fall, just because we can't get a consistent response out of it. I mean, we had a trial, I think, 2 years ago now where we did 500 and 1,000 pounds in season of dry potash. And I think we're on year three after that, and we still haven't been able to find those zones. So we've moved to a plant-based or what's the plant need type application in season, which is not easy. It's not pleasant, but it has shown some positive results. Actually, for the first time this year, we were able to raise our tissue levels of potassium in season, right in the heat of rapid growth, even without water. So that tells me that we're getting on the right track, but it's not an easy application to make.
Yeah, we were talking with Bill Brush earlier about the same thing, that he said, I'd really like to see those K levels rise during the season. And certainly our demand is rising. We need more of the K, and just getting it into the plant is tough. Matt, kudos to you and your group on your farm for figuring some of these things out, for working so hard, and for all the studying that you're doing too. I remember we did a soils clinic in Illinois a few years back, and Matt was sitting in the front row, and we were getting questions, and we had more questions coming in than we could handle. And I said, well, why don't you ask Matt? And Matt started answering questions too. I still remember that, Matt. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much. We appreciate having you on today.
No problem, dear. Anytime.
Talking about potassium on today's Ag PhD radio show, and also taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Hey, Adam, new drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn?
Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean, weed-free his entire field looked. I'm, like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetual, and its burn-down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit Valent.com/Perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. Today on the show, we are talking about potassium. If you've got any questions for us, you can call us here, 844-44-AG-PHD, or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. With this potassium topic, I will just tell you this. On our own farm here, and this is, so there, if you listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that there are some things we speak extremely passionately about. And the reason why is because it's helped us and helped thousands of farmers that we've worked with so much over the years. So drainage is number one. On the fertility side, potassium is probably the number one element where we have just seen far too many people not applying enough. And it's not that every single year you would have to apply a lot more potassium than you're putting on today. But when you look at the simple statistics across the United States, for example, farmers are removing more potassium than they are applying. That's a fact. So, I mean, when you take a look at the potassium thing overall, it's no wonder our soil test levels are getting down in the 1%, 2% kind of range, and it's just not sufficient. You've got to get those levels up. Once you have the levels up, well, then all you need to do is a maintenance level, you know, just applying what your crop removed. But I don't think in a lot of cases people really realize how much potassium is getting removed, especially with soybeans. And let me just ask you this. How much potassium did you put on for your soybean crop this year? Most people, when I ask them that question, they say, well, yeah, but it's no big deal. I put on more for my corn than I actually need. Really? Do you? Look at 250 bushel corn, for example. What does 250 bushel corn take? What we would tell you is look at the Ag PhD Fertilizer Removal app. It's a free download and just grain removal only right there. For 250 bushel corn, 62.5 pounds. So you got to put on over 100 pounds of potash if, let's say, you were using potash. Now, there are plenty of other sources. I'm not saying potash is the greatest thing ever or anything like that. I'm just saying that's the one that most people talk about. But anyway, so you got to put on over 100 pounds right there. Now, let's say you're raising a decent soybean crop, 70 bushel soybeans. You know what that takes? 84 pounds of K2O potassium. 84. So you start taking 84, that's 140 pounds of potash. So in other words, every 2 years, you've got to be putting on close to 250 pounds of potash, otherwise you are falling behind. And most people are not putting on 250 pounds of potash for their corn. So then when I ask them the question, well, I'm not putting anything on for my soybeans, but I put extra on for my corn. You're not putting on enough extra in a lot of cases. That's all I'm trying to get at here. And you want to get that level built up for two reasons. Number one, we talked earlier about base saturation. And so you have your potassium in balance, in ratio, with your calcium, magnesium, sodium, and hydrogen. That's really important. The other side of it is this. If you farm in a drier area, like we do, for example, you've got to have your potassium that much higher. with potassium, it absolutely goes in with water. Well, when there's less water going into the plant and you want the same amount of potassium to get in there, what does that tell you? That tells you your concentration has to be higher. So again, in a lot of these soils that we deal with, I mean, you look at most of southern Canada, most of the Midwestern United States, it's heavy soil. The ground's frozen for half the year. We don't get a tremendous amount of rainfall. That potassium's not going anywhere. Now, yes, if you're in Alabama and you got a 3 CEC and you get 80 inches of rain, plus you're irrigating and you never freeze, then I get it. You got to spoon feed the potassium. That's a different situation. Okay, so in that case, I'm going to feed it a little bit all the way along. I still want to get to 7% base saturation K, or, you know, at least 4. But the point is, in very light soils, if it's a 3 CEC, you only need a few pounds and you're up to where you need to be on the base saturation test. So it's super cheap. And then you just add some as you go through the season with every crop. Okay. But in these heavy soils, you can't do it that way. It's not going to work because you're not going to get the potassium into the plant. It's too cold, ground's too heavy, and the weather's too dry. So if you're in a dry area with heavy soil and it's cold, you want to have those potassium levels built up in the soil. That absolutely will work. So, and again, like I say, if I'm dead wrong, what happens? Worst case scenario, if I'm dead wrong, which I'm not, but if I was dead wrong, all you have to do is not apply potassium for the next couple, 3 years. Now you're right back to even. So it's no big deal. And if you don't believe what I'm telling you, try it on your farm. I didn't believe it at first either. And this is, let's see, oh, it's been over 20 years ago now. And I started doing this because this is what I had heard and what I'd learned. I'm like, well, whatever, we'll try some. Sure enough, it was a big deal. And for soybeans, it was massive. And you can see the reason why. A good soybean crop takes more potassium for the grain removal than a good corn crop. It takes more. It's huge. So when we started getting our potassium levels up, we saw our bean yields go from 40 to 70 on average in just a few years. And that's no joke. And it was potassium. Now, granted, drainage helped too. We were doing some tiling then. And so we had some spots that needed the drainage. But we only spot tile on our farm. We don't have to pattern tile hardly anything. We got enough hills and all that. But the potassium was the big key. And you could just see the yields keep going up. And here's the other interesting thing. With the soybeans, the seed size went up. Our average seed size got so much bigger. It was unbelievable. And that was mainly due to potassium. Yes, I mean, you can attribute a little bit to some of the other things we were doing, some of the micronutrients and sulfur and all that. But the main thing, potassium. So if you're having issues with soybean yields, a lot of time, and not corn, let's say your corn's amazing and your soybeans aren't, I bet you your potassium is not high enough. You need to get that potassium level up. And don't let people tell you, oh, you have 200 or 300 parts per million in the soil. That's enough. No, it's not if you have heavy soil, because you're out of balance. Your ratio's not enough because you've got thousands of pounds of calcium and magnesium out there in a heavy soil. Well, you got to get the potassium in ratio with it. Once you do that, things will start to change. Things will start to improve. Your yields will go up. Your profits will go up. And at the end of the day, you haven't invested any more money, okay? Now, you might say, well, you just told me to put on a whole bunch more potassium. Yes, but the crop's only going to remove what the crop's going to remove. If your yield was to stay the same, then you didn't spend a dime more. You put the money out in advance, maybe a year or two or 5 years early, okay? But your yield is what takes the potassium. All right. So yes, if you go up 50 bushels in corn, well, yeah, it's going to take a little more potassium, but I think most of us will have that trade-off. Yep. Well, we'll let go of a little bit more potassium because of my extra 50 bushels. That's fine. But anyway, you see where I'm going with this whole thing. This potassium is just an enormously big deal. And unfortunately, most people are misinformed about potassium. Oh, and there's one last thing I want to leave you with on potassium. So when I went to college, and I realized that was in the dark ages, that was a long time ago, but nevertheless, so I go to college. And these professors are trying to tell me, oh, you know, kids, there is more than enough potassium for your entire lifetime and probably your kids and your grandkids too. There's so much potassium in the soil. And they're right. But the problem is, and what they neglected to teach me, unless, of course, I slept through that part, which I don't think I did, but what they neglected to teach us was this. most all the potassium that's in your soil that they say, oh, it's natural and it's sitting there and it's been there for thousands of years and it's ready and all this stuff. No, it's not ready because it's in the form of feldspars. You know what feldspars are? They're rocks. And how quickly does rock break down and come available for your crop? Not real fast in my experience. Okay, so if you ever hear somebody telling you, oh, there's enough potassium naturally in your soil, you say, yeah, that's a bunch of nonsense. I mean, if you got some magic potion that'll break down the rocks, then sure, we're in great shape. But until you come up with that, there is flat out not enough potassium in any soil naturally. So you got to look at a real test. Look at a soil test and what's actually available today for potassium. That's what I'm interested in. And if you don't have enough, and if you're not in ratio with your other nutrients, you just have to flat out apply more. In heavy soils, especially where it's cold and dry, put it out early. Put it out 2 years in advance, 5 years in advance. Get the soil levels built up. Okay, but if you've got sandy soil with lots of rainfall and you never freeze, it's a whole different deal. There, you just want to keep spoon feeding. Otherwise, you're going to lose that. Not as quick as nitrogen, but you would lose it. All right, we're going to get to more of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag right after this.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation. Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic fungicides from Atticus LLC. Fungal diseases can be devastating, but Acadia, Slant, and Talaris 4.5F from Atticus deliver lasting, broad-spectrum fungi control so your soybeans, sugar beets, and dry beans can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the Endzone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean and weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and its burn down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans like literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit valent.com/perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. We are right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag right now. If you've got a question for us, it is, 844-44-AG-PHD if you want to call us, or you can email us radio@agphd.com. I was getting all excited to answer Mark from Nebraska's question here. He just said, hey, guys, you were talking about a nitrogen to sulfur ratio when you're applying it of like 8-1 or 10-1 in liquid. What should the nitrogen to boron ratio be? Okay, so Mark, let's just talk about corn. So that's usually where we're discussing this. When you're applying nitrogen in corn, we just often will tell you, hey, if you're going to be, let's say, doing some side dressing, throw a little bit of sulfur in with your nitrogen. You're going to gain a couple of things. Number one, you get a little bit of stabilization out of the nitrogen or out of the sulfur toward the nitrogen, so stabilizing the nitrogen a little bit. And the other big thing is when you have the right level of sulfur in the plant is more efficient at using nitrogen. So you can actually get by with a little bit less nitrogen if you have the sulfur out there. So it's good for several reasons. Anyway, if you look at how much nitrogen does a corn crop need, for every 100 pounds of nitrogen the corn crop needs, it needs roughly 13 pounds of sulfur. So that's where this 8-1 kind of ratio comes in. So pretty simple. You can again look at the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app and you'll find that information. Well, for every 100 pounds of nitrogen, you know how much boron you need for corn? 0.23 pounds. So you need a quart. You need a quart. Now that's actual boron. Okay. So, and I shouldn't even say that. When I say a quart, it might be a quart. It all depends on what percentage you're getting and everything else. Just understand it's a quarter of a pound for every 100 pounds. So it's actual N to actual B. So however you can get that little bit of boron out there, that may be important. But here's the other thing that you got to understand. With both the sulfur and the boron, all soils are a little different. So for example, if I've got a very light soil, then I'm going to stick with this ratio pretty well because the nitrogen, sulfur, and boron are all going to leach out. If I have a super heavy soil and not a lot of rainfall, I don't necessarily have to put on that much sulfur or boron, and here's why. Because nitrate leaches at about twice the speed of sulfate, roughly. And sulfate leaches even faster than boron. So boron leaches the slowest of the three nutrients, nitrate the fastest. So you see where I'm going with this. If I'm already sitting in good shape in my soil, I haven't had a lot of rain and I got super heavy soil, but if my sulfur and my boron levels are already good, I may not have to add a whole lot more. So it does get a little bit tricky, but again, I just kind of refer to the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app, see what you actually need, and then start running some experiments. We talk about this all the time, but we do this on our farm where we've got these soil tests and we've got yield data from each one of the GPS points where we pulled soil tests, and you can just see, okay, what level of boron do I need in my soil? What level of sulfur do I need in my soil? And then you start letting the data guide your results. Or I should say, guide what you want to. The data is your results. The data can guide you toward a better fertility program in the future.
Thanks for the question. Got this one from Vlad, who had a couple of things on potassium. And he said, first of all, I want to build my soil potassium levels. I'm planning to spread 20 tons per acre of composted goat manure. Wondering if that's going to be too much in 1 year. I've got a CEC of 33. Also, Neil Kinsey talks about the correlation between soil pH and potassium. And his statement is, if the pH is above 6.5, that the soil colloids are saturated and can't retain applied potassium. Wondering if that's true for all soil types and situations and what your experience tells you on that as well.
And do we have a test on?
Well, the first thing I'd say, Vlad, is we would say get that goat manure or that composted goat manure tested and see what your levels of things are in the manure or in the compost. And we just worry, you know, when you're putting on a large volume of anything, we want to know exactly what's in it, how much salt is in there, how many other things are in there. So that would be something that we'd look at, and we'd need to see that before we'd know if that's too much.
Right. How many tons did he say?
20. Sounds 20. Like a lot.
Well, yeah, it sounds like a lot, but it's compost, not manure. Would I do it, you know, without having the data? No. But is he probably going to be okay for a one-time application? Yes. It's just you definitely do not want to do that on a real regular basis because the odds are pretty high. You got a bunch of salt in there. So that's our number one concern. But yeah, if you can get the test results, then we could give you a better opinion on that. I would say on this comment, So Neil Kinsey will say, all right, if the pH is above 6.5,
Bill Bresch said earlier in the show today,
you can't build potassium levels with commercial fertilizer, not compost or manure. Okay, so your compost is going to be fine, all right? But with commercial fertilizer, can't build the K levels. Now, we've actually been able to do it. And I've talked to Neil about this, and he said, well, yeah, but at the same time, were you working to lower your pH in your high pH ground? I go, yep. And he said, well, that would make an absolute difference. I said, yeah, I guess I didn't really think about that. We're trying to get our pHs down to that 6.5-ish kind of range. That's where we want to be for corn, soybeans, and wheat anyway. So if you're doing some other things, for example, improving drainage, using a little bit of elemental sulfur, just making some other changes in that soil, then maybe that's the reason why we've been able to do it. But we absolutely have been able to do it with commercial fertilizer. So I'm not saying that you necessarily would if you use commercial fertilizer, but I know we have been able to do it. And we've worked with a number of other farmers who have. But again, maybe it's just the fact we're trying to lower that pH as well at the same time.
All right, thanks for the questions, Vlad. This one comes from Joe in North Dakota. He said, we're going to do a little bit of cover crop with a half a bushel of barley and a couple pounds of radishes, trying to eliminate fallow syndrome for next year's corn in PP ground here.
Yep, should be fine.
We can still up the phosphorus for next year, and we were planning on using a biological product called MicroCycle 2. Any other suggestions that you think we could put on for next year's corn?
Mycoapply Endoprime. That's actual mycorrhiza fungi. I think we just talked about that. Was that yesterday or the day before? Anyway, that's a pretty good one from Valent. In terms of this cover crop, now, if we're talking North Dakota, and this is just getting seeded now, it's getting pretty late in the season. It will still help, and the barley is what's going to help. The radishes won't help at all. Radishes do not support mycorrhiza fungi, but radishes can give you some other benefits, so having some in there certainly doesn't hurt, and a half a bushel of barley is more than enough to get the microbial life going, or the mycorrhiza fungi specifically. So, yeah, I would, going into this next year, use just a little bit more phosphorus. The microcycle's good, and I would also use a little MycoApply Endoprime, and you should be able to raise a pretty good crop. Oh, and in the future, try to fix the drainage. If you get the drainage fixed, hopefully there's no more prevent plant.
All right, thanks for the question. You got this one about boron. You'd mentioned boron here just a minute ago, Brian. This is from Andrew up in the Red River Valley. He said, he talked about...
Wait, Red River Valley of North Dakota and Minnesota. Yep.
Correct.
Okay.
He said, he talked about applying boron, and he said, I'm wondering, could we dissolve it in water, run it through our sprayer, and just spray it out on the soil surface?
Yes.
Wondering what other micros I could apply this way, and if there's tank mix issues between the products. Also, he said,
One at a time. In most cases, no, there aren't tank mix issues, but I mean, there certainly could be. So you got to be a little careful, especially if you're trying to mix dry things in a solution, that can be a problem. If you're trying to mix dry things in straight water, that's fine. So you might have to pre-slurry some products as well. Go ahead.
Okay. He said, also, my local fertilizer dealer doesn't want to spread zinc sulfate for me. They're using Wolftrax zinc. The cost is quite a bit. I'm concerned about the impregnating process. Just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
I hate impregnation, not for the fertilizer, but for the herbicide, because now you don't get nearly as good a coverage. So it's not going to work as well.
They're going to impregnate it on dry fertilizer. They're putting, so Wolftrax does powder.
Okay. I automatically assume people are dry fertilizer.
I've heard guys having success with that.
Yep.
It's something to do. But like you said, you have to look at the cost on everything that you're doing and what your return on investment is going to be. And if there are different ways that you could get zinc out in there cheaper and get it into your plant, great. You've got to check those things out.
Yep, we bought a used floater cheap, I think last spring. So we started using that. That's great. We bought, we've had multiple fertilizer spreaders over the years. I mean, you can get a lot of those. Even new, they are not that expensive. So you can start doing these things yourself too. It's a super easy job to go spread fertilizer. And then you're in control. And yeah, zinc sulfate is cheap. And so that's what we do. And we are always talking to you about trying to get the most for the fewest dollars possible. So sometimes that just means you got to do it yourself.
All right. Thanks for the questions. Really appreciate that, Andrew. And thanks to you for listening to our show. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.